Howdy, folks, and welcome to Moose Podcast number 515, yours, quote-unquote, stupid questions. Trust you folks are doing well. Here we are in downside of August and heading towards fall. Oh, geez. Hope you're doing well. If you hear some booms during this podcast, it's not my head exploding, which is always possible, but in this case, we are starting up or in the midst of thunderstorm season here in the Bitterroot. This will be day four, and I got a big sale coming my way, so hopefully I can get this done before I have to turn things off. But I know some of you folks have also talked to my good friend in Illinois, and lots of rain up there as well. It's been raining here. We had nearly an inch in 20 hours. Really welcome, but that's a lot. We had lots of flash flood warnings there for a while. Still have fires going, but they are not spreading. So we'll take that as a win. By the way, I've been adding things to my doodad list that you can find and access at the bottom right corner of the landing page on the website. Might just be things there you might just need to find and see, so don't forget to check that out. This episode of the Moose Podcast is, again, being recorded using Adobe Podcast Beta. Keep in mind that you can listen to the podcast many locations, but Spotify and YouTube, you can leave questions. And of course, if you head to the blog post for the podcast on the website, you'll find links and a photo, probably something that was mentioned and talked about during the podcast. So you can check that out at moosepeterson.com. So it's been kind of a busy week. We had our first fall migrants show up, which we actually keep a spreadsheet of all of, I'm taking credit for what Sharon does. We keep a spreadsheet of the birds we see, and the evening grosbeaks arrived 6 days later than we first saw them last year, which is interesting. Got some little wobbles here and there, stuff moving on and through, including our hummingbirds. So it's kind of exciting to see. It's a two-edged sword, of course, because I'm not really ready to say goodbye to summer. I'm happy to see some of the high temps go away, but I'm not sure I want the birds. Our fawns are grown up. One is their spots are fading really fast. We've got two bucks now, 4 points. One's got a narrow spread. The other's got a wider spread that are hanging around. One of them is a fawn that was born literally on our front lawn a couple of years ago. So it's kind of fun to have a buck or two that's actually kind of friendly. It doesn't go berserk as soon as they see us and run for the hills. So that's pretty cool. If you didn't notice, Photoshop World announcements went up this past week. Yep, I'll be speaking. I'm doing two classes there. One on my light adventures, which I'm also doing at Mike's Camera coming up first week of September. And also doing a presentation on Ecuadorian birds from our adventure earlier this year. So I hope you come on by to Photoshop World and Mike's there in Denver. It's going to be a great time. Really look forward to it. And if you have questions, of course, when you're in person, we can have a much longer and in-depth conversation. I want to thank my good friend at Bedfords, bedfords.com, for sponsoring the Moose Podcast. Had a direct email this week, and they said, do you really shop at Bedfords, and how often? Yes, I do shop at Bedfords. Now, how often? If you ask Bedfords, not often enough. If you ask our accountant, too often. So, yeah, I was just talking with him again this past week, looking up some and trying to get some filters. So, you know, Bedfords, they've got so much gear. Oh, Lordy. And they got great prices. They keep having these spot sales. They've been doing quite a bit with their used gear. And keep in mind that on these sales, no matter what brand or if it's new or used, whatever that sale price is, when you check out, you get another 5% back. Yeah. So you guys, I don't know why you don't go there. I mean, there are 7 stores. It's easy to click on the web, and they're a phone call away. Great people, great prices, killer inventory. My dear friends, Bedfords at Bedfords.com. Your stupid questions, quote unquote. So, I don't know how many emails start with, I have a stupid question for you. Or how many in-person, you know, conversations start with, hey, can I ask you a stupid question? Let me tell you something. The only stupid question is the one you don't ask. That's really stupid. So I thought I would just do a podcast on stupid questions. The first one is, you know, I'm afraid of, quote unquote, blah, blah, blah. Stop being afraid. I mean, that to me, that is stupid. And this is just photography. The sun will come up no matter what happens. If you do it right or wrong, you'll still see the sun come up and go down, giving you another opportunity to do it again. So ditch the fear. So many questions. It's like, get past it, folks. It's just photography. The only thing it can cost you is possibly more money because you find success and you like the taste of it and you go out and do some more. That's nothing to really be afraid of. Dust. People are continually asking me, and it's continual, do I still clean my sensor? Because in Adobe Camera Raw Lightroom, you have a little box, you check it, and it'll clean the dust that's on your picture. Well, about 90, 92%, I find. It's not really 100%. You still have to go and do some. And if you're doing anything with aviation and you're shooting really close down and you're shooting the sky, you're going to find there's more dust and a lot of times little flying bugs than you can imagine. So do I still clean my sensor? Yes. That's why in my latest class for Kelby One, which will be dropping shortly on the Prepared Wildlife Photographer, I have to go over cleaning your sensor again. So yeah, I still worry about dust. I still clean my sensor. Still an important thing. Not a stupid question to ask something like that. Get a lot of people say, I know it's a stupid question, but do filters really degrade image quality? Oh God, I get that a lot. So folks, I still use the Arcrest filter on all of my lenses, 95 millimeter all the way down, 95, 82, 77, 67. I don't know if you heard that. That was a good thunder clap. Anyway, I still use filters. Skylight filters, the Arcrest filter is not even that. I don't know what you call it because it doesn't seem to collect dust. It doesn't, oil doesn't get on it. Water comes off it. Now, what about other filters? Well, just so happens that right now I'm up to my eyeballs doing research on filters. I'm doing Earth, Maven, Breakthrough, maybe Case, going through and testing a whole lot for another class that I'm developing for Kelby One. So filters, yeah, I still use them. Can they degrade image quality? I guess technically, but in a 24 by 30, I'm not seeing a degradation of quality. So why worry about it? I much more worry about, if I'm talking about a quote-unquote protective filter like the Arcrest, I'd much rather have the filter take the whack than the front element of my lens, because let me tell you, your front element takes a whack, you're definitely going to see an image quality drop, woo, you know, and a wallet, woo, drop. So, hey, filters, I still use them, and they are creative, and they have changed, I have found, a lot since the last time I really took a big dive into to filters. I don't know if you guys can hear these claps of thunder. Okay. Now, this is, this one really came as, you know, the email said, this is probably going to sound like a really stupid question. You probably get this a lot. But I was told that my images would be better if I switched to Nikon. A very biased opinion to that question? Yeah, they might. A realistic, honest world? Nah, probably not. You know, between the brands is my humble opinion. It's like a lot of things in life. They all work a little bit different logically. And if that logic fits you, which includes the ergonomics of the camera fitting in your hand, that's what you should go with. Because if it feels like a good friend and it makes sense to you, then the picture making process will be simpler, okay, less complicated. And when you go that route, you can only help but have better photographs. Because when you make it more complicated, there is greater chance of what? Something goofing up. So I shoot with Nikon, and I've said this from the beginning, one, because they believed in me. And over 50 years ago, they said, let me help you. And they still continue this day. So I'm very loyal. But two, they have, as far as I'm concerned, the best color. They still do. It's just, and color is everything. And black and white is color, folks. Don't ask me. Black and white's color. So yeah, I think Nikon does a better job. Is it perfect? No. Am I perfect? No. So we're kind of made for each other, aren't we? Because we're neither one are perfect. We just move forward with our foibles and keep on going. So the answer, what you think is might be a stupid question. Switching to Nikon gonna make you a better photographer? In the real world, probably not. Is it gonna make you, if it fits your logic and less complicated system? Yeah, you'll find photography funner, and in that process, you'll be better. Now, this is a question that I wasn't sure how I should do. If I should do just a, you know, whole podcast on this one. Tripods. Look, this could be a stupid question, but what makes a good one? Oh, what makes a good tripod? Well, one, what is the problem you're trying to solve? If you find the tripod that solves that problem, then you have a good one, better one, maybe the best one. Case in point, I'm shooting all the time with a Z9 on a Z600 F4 TC. A lot of glass, and a lot of times I'll put a 1.4 or 2X onto that lens in addition to the built-in 1.4. When you have that kind of mass, okay, both exerting itself down and then as you pan sideways, stability is everything. So the better the spread of those legs, the better you're going to have stability in your photograph, which means what? A sharp picture. Now, with that Benro Mammoth tripod, I have on it the Wildlife head. And that fluid head is really important. And I credit a lot of my incredible slow shutter speed, to quote somebody, sharp pictures to that system. Now, I have a friend of mine, love her dearly, and she likes to tell a story about the very first workshop she went on with me down at Grand Canyon. And she just picked up, new to her at Costco, this tripod. And she was showing the other folks this grand tripod she picked up for, you know, just really like $20, $25. I remember exact. I should. She tells the story enough. And I did my famous stupid moose thing. And I walked up and said something. She was telling me about it. I said, so you're going to trust your $2,000 camera setup to a $20 tripod? And then she kind of like, maybe it's not the best one. So what makes a good tripod? Price point is not the first criteria. Stability that it will deliver is. And if you're going to be shooting on asphalt all the time, you might get away with that $20 tripod for a while, but at some point it will give up and you just don't want it to give up on you when you've got something expensive on it. If you're working on sand or snow or other substrates where you need that tripod to be a foundation, it does matter. I do particularly recommend and shoot just Benro tripods anymore. I get them from Bedford's. You know, you can find them on the website, moosemirror.com. I love the Tortoise. I love the latest head, which I can't remember, it was what, TC64, some weird thing. You'll find it on the website. I love their tabletop tripod. And their monopod, I didn't think I'd really get into it, but all those things are my preference. They have the physical lightest possible tripod, which, contrary to some, I think that does not take away from stability. It adds to it, but it sure adds more miles when you're carrying it. So they're physically light. Don't get fazed by rain or snow or ice. And they're pretty inexpensive considering what you're buying. I wish there's a place we could actually rent tripods and try them out. Nobody really does it on a continual basis, but that's what I'd recommend, because otherwise you're going to be like a lot of photographers and have a closet of tripods. Next stupid, quote unquote, stupid question. Photo backpacks. Do I have one I like to recommend? Well, yeah, the Moose backpack. It's called the MP1, 3, or 5. The problem is that they are long out of production. Now, folks do find them mostly in Europe brand new and sometimes on eBay. Is there another one, which is what the stupid question one, is there another photo pack that I recommend since mine aren't readily available? I haven't tried any in the last 20, I invented the MP series in 99. So, you know, 27 years later, I haven't tried any. So I regret I don't have an answer for you on that one. Last stupid question, okay, quote unquote. And remember, the only stupid question is the one you don't ask, as far as I'm concerned. Monitor calibration, is it really important? Oh, you guys hearing that one? That was a long rumble. Anyway, it's getting dark out. Bottom line, monitor calibration. There is so divided a camp on this that all I can tell you is I still calibrate my desktop monitor every Tuesday morning, and I do my notebook every 2 weeks. Why do I do it? Because when I finish a photograph, I do it by visual, not by numbers. And when I bring up that image today, I want it to look the same next year and 5 years from now. Just like when I go back to images, I just was printing images for a client that was 13 years old. And when I potted up, and I looked at it, and I knew that they were basically, they already had two prints. They wanted the same two prints to put into another office. They had to match. How do you make sure you're consistent? Well, workflow is part of it. Calibrated monitor is a big part of it. So you could say if you are selling two 24 by 30 prints, right? That's $2,500. That's a big motivation to keep that monitor calibrated. What if you aren't selling those prints? Well, if you want to be able to look at your own photographs on that monitor to see your own growth from last year, 5, 10 years ago, wouldn't it be nice if there was consistent so you didn't have to think about, oh, maybe I should switch to Nikon to get better color, you know, because the problem is actually not the camera, it's your monitor. So that's just one variable that's removed from the equation. So it's not a stupid question. Monitor calibration, I think, is important for growth, for consistency, for income, for all those and everything else. So there you have it. So you might be wondering, those were actually the top 2, 4, 6, 7 questions, stupid questions that I get that I thought I'd answer. Are there more? Oh yeah, there's a lot more. But I can see that I'm about to hit 20 minutes, so that's a pretty long podcast. I hope some of this helps you and alleviates this idea about stupid questions, because don't forget, the only stupid question, as far as I'm concerned, is the one you don't ask, so you don't have stupid questions. You folks take care. Get out there and shoot. Keep on sharing. And remember to make every click your story.